Hello and welcome to the Compliance Week podcast. I'm Joe Mont, staff writer for Compliance Week. We'll be chatting today with Jeanette Turner, Chief Regulatory Officer at Compliance Solutions Strategies, a global RegTech platform that serves compliance professionals across the financial services industry. In this edition, we discuss forthcoming requirements included in the SEC's reporting modernization and liquidity risk management rule. It's a slate of new disclosures and requirements intended to modernize and improve reporting by investment companies. The cost and complexity of complying with the SEC rule is already causing consternation. There is the potentially big issue of the safety of their data, specifically that an SEC data breach could expose investment firms' proprietary algorithms and trading strategies. Security concerns previously delayed the compliance state of the rule. We asked Turner to tell us about the new rule, what it is intended to do, and, although previously delayed, what the new compliance states look like.
The reporting modernization rule is really part of this bigger shift you're seeing at the SEC and really regulators around the world, where reporting now is about data. And regulators are hiring data analysts, you know, instead of more attorneys, to analyze data, to identify risks, and get an understanding of a firm ahead of an exam. So regulators just want more data. They want to do more with the data. And in order to do that, they need machine-readable format. So we saw this, you know, at CSS. We've been doing this for a while now, and we saw this back in 2012 with Form PF with hedge funds. And then they moved on to money market funds, and now it's mutual funds and ETFs with this reporting modernization rule that you're talking about. And to modernize the mutual fund reporting, they're really just replacing some reporting that already exists. So NPORT replaces MQ, and NSEN is the new reporting form, and former SEC Chair Mary Jo White called it a fundamental change in reporting. Really what's changed is you're providing more detailed information, you're providing it more often, and in the structured data format, which is like an XML format. The second one, the liquidity rule, the SEC refers to as a game changer. It's a complete overhaul, really, of how mutual funds operate and how they do business and how they think of liquidity. There are four main areas of the rule, but really there's only one part that everyone is talking about or that is stressing everybody out, and that's the requirement to classify your portfolio by liquidity. And you have to take each investment, classify it into one of four liquidity buckets, review your portfolio in normal and stress conditions, and monitor it and reclassify as needed. And they really think of this as a game changer. And these two rules are related because some of the information from the liquidity rule is then reported on forms that are part of the reporting modernization rule. So you just need to read the two rules together to get an understanding. And in terms of compliance dates, the dates have moved around a lot, as you said. Really, they now span 2 years, and there are a lot of different dates. Some questions on one form will have a different compliance date. So firms just want to kind of pay attention and take a look at which dates apply to them. You're either a large firm or a small firm, and it's based on whether just your group of regulatory investment companies equal $1 billion or more in net assets, or whether you're smaller. And if you're larger, you go first, and if you're smaller, you go next, and you can learn from the larger firms. The first date is this June 1st.
An earlier delay was tied to security issues with the SEC's EDGAR database being hacked. The Commission's forthcoming consolidated audit trail has also raised data security concerns. What are the security risks that could be triggered with this rule, given the SEC's technological backdrop and woes? Simply put, is the data of covered entities safe?
You know, that's a really good question, and it's certainly one that is a hot topic right now in the industry. The SEC is hearing over and over again, you know, I think every time they put out a reporting requirement, they hear back about data concerns. And if you think about it, firms were already reporting on EDGAR. So these are not new concerns about EDGAR, which was already around and already had these concerns. What's happening is you're reporting more sensitive information. And because you're reporting more often and, you know, and on a 30-day deadline, once the information, you know, after the reporting date, you're reporting so quickly, the information is more valuable to someone to hack. And so the concerns have increased, right? So it's not that EDGAR is suddenly more susceptible to hacking than it was a year ago, it's that the damage that could be done is greater. And if you think about it with in terms of endpoint, where the concerns are, the SEC is receiving really a trove of structured data. And this data really is the lifeblood of a fund. It's the intellectual capital. And they're feeding it into EDGAR, and everyone's going to want to get their hands on it. If it were to be hacked, it could lead to reverse engineering of your investment strategies and front-running trades, which all of this affects shareholders, you know, who the SEC is ultimately trying to protect. In terms of consolidated audit trail, it's similar. It's a new system. It's not an existing system, but it's compiling information from multiple places, and you're really taking, like, billions of records and over 100 million customer accounts in one location. So, again, it's that all of this valuable, sensitive information is sitting there in one place. And what's the SEC's response to this? I mean, really, they've just repeated over and over again that they will not accept sensitive information unless they think the data will be safe. But they want everyone to move forward as though this is going to happen. They're not going to change their desire to get their hands on this data. But they have reassured the public that the firms that are filing that they're not going to take the data until their shirts raise. And to this end, you've seen the SEC delayed reporting on EDGAR for Form N-PORT. You still have to report it. You just have to keep the information in your books and records. But the reporting on EDGAR was delayed 6 months because of these concerns around security.
Most funds are accustomed to keeping their data private, but under the SEC rule, every quarter, company filings will be made public. What hazards or concerns does this raise? Will making data public allow investors and competitors to potentially run algorithms that reveal proprietary strategies and positions?
Putting it in a structured data format where they don't get to explain everything and where they're doing calculations as prescribed by the regulator and not how they would do it. And the information, by being in a structured data format, allows the public to run algorithms on it the same way the regulator's going to. So that makes you nervous. What mitigates that is that they're not getting all of the information the SEC is getting. They're only getting some of the information that's reported in the form. They're only getting every third month. It's the last month of each fiscal quarter is reported, so they're not getting every month. And they're going to get it on a 60-day delay. So the idea is that, yes, this information is going out into the public, but hopefully it's not as useful or valuable, you know, as people might fear. And so the SEC feels like these terms mitigate, you know, the fear or the concerns of having it out there. And they have been listening to the industry, honestly. One of the biggest concerns was over the liquidity classification that I just mentioned being made public. And they went ahead and removed that information from the form. They just did that recently and said, you know what, we'll take that out of the form. And you can put it in your annual shareholder report, where you can put it in human-readable terms and provide context around it, rather than it being in structured data format. So that's just an example of the SEC listening to these concerns. And so not all of the information is being made public, but yes, it is true that the information that is out there will be in a structured data format that you could, you know, run algorithms on. And that'll be interesting to see how that plays out and how people use that information.
What logistical challenges do firms face? Many, for example, may have a slightly different take on definitions for certain financial terms. Could they get in trouble for providing one or two pieces of information that just don't look the same as other firms?
This is something that we've seen the SEC grapple with in its process of modernizing reporting, you know, beginning with hedge funds and then money market funds and now mutual funds. They left open to interpretation how, you know, certain terms. And they did that to make it easier on firms filing these forms. So you will see multiple filers applying a different definition to a word, you know, or using a different calculation. And that's okay. And it's sort of iterative, right? The SEC is going to receive this information, think about it, absorb it, and then decide whether they need to put out more instructions and be more prescriptive. And then they might put out more guidance and ask you to, you know, refine your calculation. So it's okay if you're applying a different interpretation. The key is to be consistent with how you report elsewhere, whether internally or externally. And then, of course, you're going to have different interpretation across funds that have different strategies and different sub-advisors, and that's okay too. So it will be a little messy, but nobody's going to, you know, you're not going to get in trouble for it.
What other concerns are there, including the threat of potentially misleading investors with such a focus on liquidity risk?
The best way to explain all the problems is to just do a walkthrough of what firms have to go through to do this filing, and you'll see the problems play out. So first, you take the form and you read the form. And in order to understand what's required of you, you have to cross-reference to other instructions that are in other rules. And you have to take all these different terms and decide how you're going to interpret the terms, decide how your firm will answer these questions. And when you decide that, you have to figure out how you're actually going to answer the question. Where's the data you need to answer this question? And then guess what? The data, it's sitting in different locations. It's sitting on legacy systems, and those systems don't talk to each other. Some of the data you'll find out is in more than one location, and you're going to have to choose which one to use. Some of the data you'll find out is outside the firm with third parties. And a lot of the information, if you're using sub-advisors, is sitting with your sub-advisor, of course. And then when you figure that out, where is this data located? Is it good? Is it good quality? Is it clean? Is it usable? Or does it need to be formatted? And so what firms will do is they're going to normalize the data, which means they're going to take it to a granular level and feed it into a centralized database so that it can be used to answer these questions, to run a calculation, apply the calculation, report it to the form. Then the next challenge is you have to do this on a 30-day deadline, and you have to do it every single month. So there's really no time here. I mean, this is a complete game changer for the industry. There is no time to really second-guess your answer or to really think through your answer. You have to automate this, and all of those data feeds that are coming from all these different systems and possibly from sub-advisors, it all needs to be automated. These are the challenges that firms are facing. And then, of course, if you have sub-advisors, they have all the information, and yet you're the one that has to report. So you have to figure out, you know, whose interpretation you're going to apply and how you're going to work out that relationship with them. Some of the ones you mentioned are after you report. Is the information misleading? You know, is it consistent with other reporting that you're doing elsewhere? Is there a chance to explain, you know, what you've reported and maybe create a playbook internally to do that? I mean, that's with the reporting rule. With the liquidity rule, the challenges really are around the classification buckets that I mentioned. So what's happening here, this is really the first time that any regulator has required this anywhere. So this is so new and unproven for any of these funds. You have just so many variables with the funds when you're doing the classification. Fund management industry in the U.S. is quite diverse. There's a lot of asset classes, investment methods, strategies, difference in size, culture of firms, and then sub-advisors. The concept of liquidity is so subjective, and you have all these data gaps. In order to make these judgment calls on liquidity, you need certain market data, and that market data is not available for some asset classes, like fixed income securities, you know, asset-backed securities and bank loans, OTC derivatives. And so you have to take all these extra steps to get the data, and then you have to make all these subjective judgment calls to decide and determine liquidity and then monitor it ongoing. So again, really challenging to create an automated rule-based system here when there are so many subjective decisions being made. Those are the challenges that firms are facing.
What is the expected cost and burden of compliance? One issue is whether companies can actually aggregate a mountain of data from disparate sources each month, as is required under the new rule. Will firms be ready to comply?
It's a complete overhaul of your operations and how you're doing things logistically, right? So there's a lot of people involved at your firm in deciding how to approach this liquidity risk management program and the reporting. how expensive or how costly it is to you in dollar amount and in terms of just time really depends on how complex your firm is. The more complex firms and the larger shops, I mean, we're hearing quotes over $1 million just to get everything set up and running. It depends on how many vendors you need to work with. It depends on how many sub-advisors you have. It's just really a logistical nightmare. And then hopefully once you get your logistics worked out, I mean, it's a heavy lift. Once you get that worked out, you should be automated. And hopefully it's business as usual going forward and you can just move forward and things will be a little easier. But really it's just about that you're depending on vendors and that you have so many parties involved to figure this out. That's really where what it comes down to.
That's all the time we have for this edition of the Compliance Week podcast. We've been chatting with Jeanette Turner, Chief Regulatory Officer at Compliance Solutions Strategies. I'm Joe Mont, Staff Writer for Compliance Week. Thanks for listening and hope you join us again next time.